This is a new session of the interview with Dean John Bollinger. This is March 1st, 1988. I'm Laura Smale, doing the interview for the University of Wisconsin-Madison Archives Oral History Project, and we're talking in his office. Would you like to start off by summarizing or talking about Shane's chancellorship and how...
All right. Well, I didn't know Irv Shane particularly well prior to 1981 when I became dean. I knew him, but I was a faculty member, so my interaction was relatively limited. And I guess really the first time that we got acquainted in any detail was when I interviewed for the job. I was in England at the time. And thinking seriously of not coming back.
Why?
Well, I had been chairman of mechanical engineering. Then we rotated that every 4 years. Then I got a Fulbright, and I did that. I planned that while I was chairman so that I had a nice way out of that job and a year to get reorganized in my research program. And I was writing a book at the time. And I had just got the feeling that this College of Engineering was sort of coming to some kind of a plateau. Enrollments were growing. We weren't really changing very rapidly. We were becoming more and more research-oriented. That started back in 72, 75 period when we started to focus more on the research mission. I think historically this college wasn't participating in the research mission of the college, of the campus, at the same level that our counterparts in biochemistry and physics and we were...
You talked about this in... In your first interview,
okay.
Yes.
Well, Bob Marshall contributed a lot to changing that. He was the one that started bringing in people who were more research-focused in the past. Now, this wasn't unusual because engineering schools in general were very practical. Most of the faculty didn't have PhDs. When I was a grad student here for my PhD in mechanical engineering, there were only a couple of PhD faculty. So, you know, it was a historic evolution from the 30s when engineering started to get involved in more research. Up to that point, it was purely practitioners' viewpoints. So it was Bob Marshall that got this started in the college. And for some reason or other, I came to the conclusion that he just wasn't being recognized by the administration, that the efforts of the college weren't being recognized. All through the 60s and 70s and on into the 80s, this college didn't get any new buildings. There was no physical plant development, not even any major renovation after the Engineering Research Building number 2 and the Kurt F. Hunt Library, which served a library function but didn't serve any other function to accommodate the growing program. So when I interviewed, well, before I interviewed for the job, I had been giving thought, as had occurred periodically about every 4 or 5 years in my career here, of opportunities start knocking on the door, you know, and you start saying, well, maybe I ought to do something else. I'm a great believer that you shouldn't just keep banging your head on the wall. You should find the challenge and the opportunities and go do it, you know. And I was kind of in that mode. Up till 1980, every time I felt that way, something happened and I stayed here, okay? I was going through that period again, all right, when I went to England. And being away in a different environment, that's the time when that kind of feeling strikes hardest, right? So it was just another one of my emotional periods of self-evaluation, I guess you might say, which is what a sabbatical is all about, right?
Yes.
So, partly. So, I had been looking, there were several deanships open and some vice presidents. I had always been looking at companies too, because I sort of have a bent for the private sector. And my wife and I had we finally decided that we would come back for a year, because you're more or less committed to come back for a year when the grad school supplements a grant like a Fulbright. So we were going to come back for a year, and in that year lay the ground for the future. Okay, that was our decision. Whether it would be to stay here or go somewhere else. But I felt if I stayed here, I had to do something that was more exciting than what it looked like it would be if I didn't do something more exciting. Then Irv Shane gave me a call and said, I'd like to interview you. And that was exciting. At first, I really didn't think I wanted to do that.
No, we had Marshall already...
Well, he had announced his retirement. He was 65, and he announced his retirement. He didn't want to retire. He really didn't want to
retire. No, I
believe
the retirement age was set.
Well, it's still sort of... I think that it's still perceived that deans will retire at 85, at 65. Yeah, at age 65.
I read that wasn't that policy was put in place so that a couple of deans could be retired?
It's very possible. I don't know anything about the policy. I got the feeling that Irv Shane wanted to retire Bob.
Yeah.
That he felt that engineering college could do more than it was doing, and that there was something between Bob Marshall and Irv that didn't click. At least that really became apparent to me at my interview with him. The faculty were somewhat unhappy. They were going directly to the chancellor. Remember, one of the things Irv said that he didn't want to have happen with any college, and that was that the faculty would be coming to the chancellor all the time instead of going to their dean. And I remembered that very, very well, and I make darn sure that I'm the first stop from here to the chancellor's office. That doesn't mean other faculty don't go to the chancellor, but it doesn't happen very often anymore. At least I think people perceive there's no reason that has to happen, that they can come here and be listened to effectively.
Get something
if
done.
If we can't get something done together, we go there. Together, right? Mm-hmm. That's the mode I've tried to be in. So, Irv, we had a good session in that interview. I had thought a lot about it, because after my name was put in nomination, I spent probably a month in England, and I came back here about every 6 weeks because I had about 15 grad students at the time that I was away. And so about every 6 weeks I flew back, and I had some consulting jobs around the country. So I'd spend a week in the States every 6 weeks. And I'd spend two weekends here. Uh-huh. I'd come on the weekend, work with my grad students for that 6 week period, and then I'd go to companies, and then I'd come back here and work another weekend, and then I'd fly back to England. It was a harassing year. But at any rate, I spent about a month before that interview thinking about this college. You know, what should it do?
You knew that your name was up for the deanship.
Yeah, I accepted the nomination. Mm-hmm. Okay, and the interviews were going to be, if you were going to be interviewed, it would be sometime in May or late April, I guess. I don't remember the dates. But so I spent about a month thinking about what this college looked like. I studied the faculty and the annual reports. And so when I went to interview with Irv, I pretty well had a plan of action, you know, of what I thought about the college. Here's my candid assessment. I'd never sat down and done that before. Mm-hmm. And he liked it. And he called me at the end of May and said, I want you to take the job. So I said, okay. There were a couple of things that we agreed on. at that time when I accepted. And one was that he would be more supportive of the college than he had in the past. That if I made my business plan of bringing in more research faculty, of getting the faculty interested in leveraging themselves more by funded research, it was all part of sort of a mini strategic plan at that point. That he would help me to get the resources. And we agreed that there were certain things that needed to happen, both from my standpoint of being successful as a dean and his satisfaction as a chancellor and seeing engineering do something, okay? We focused on a couple of key things. One was microelectronics as a key technology for the college. Have some very good people. And associated with that was a building that had been two buildings that had been under renovation planning for about 6-7 years with no real action. And I said, I need to get those things off dead center, and I'll need your help to convince people I need to do that. Well, he helped me get some money, he helped me get that through. So my association, and then in the period from 1981 until when he resigned as chancellor, he was systematically, as I made my commitments to him as to what the college would be doing, good, he increased our budget and gave me more resources. Now, I don't know if we got more of the increases that came by or if he reallocated resources from within. But by 1985, 86, we were doing pretty well. And I felt good about the college. The plan that we now developed as a college, as our Academic Planning Council, as a strategy, has been going very well. Our biggest problem is space. We solved the enrollment problem. We nailed it flat. We got some bad reputations in doing it by being elitist because of our high grade points. But if you look at a graph of enrollment, you see it hit a peak in 82. And right in 83, it started dropping, and it went right down to an equilibrium level now. So we learned to manage this thing, this place, very carefully.
Did he say why?
And he liked that. Uh-huh. In other words, we were 4 years ahead of the campus enrollment program. I cut more students out of this College of Engineering from 1982 to 1986 than the whole campus has been asked to cut out in the next 3 years by system. I took it out
they
of one college.
They could have done it sooner.
And with all the flack that people were complaining, there was no problem at all. Yeah. You can do most of it just by reorganizing the way you manage things. And so we survived that. The faculty were appreciative of it. We came from a state in 82 where kids were sitting in the window wells and on the floor in classrooms and standing in big long lines, to by 85 and 86, there were no lines.
Yeah.
Everybody was getting what they wanted, and I took some of the college reserves from the department's budgets into the college, and I used that to move around, you know, to add a section here, add a section there. So we really focused on operating the program in a much more managed way. I thought the faculty would probably rebel. You know, historically, doing some of the things I did as dean here, I took all their positions out of the departments and the vacants and stored them in a resource for the college. I took the money out. I got them to decide on what's their capacity, and we managed to that capacity. We did a lot of things that you might say in a faculty governed institution. I've had some faculty say to me, the dean can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
well, I don't do things that I know that I, unless I know darn well I can do them.
Yeah.
And then I get busy and muster the forces of opinion so that the faculty, it becomes an obvious move on the part of the mm-hmm. faculty, so that you get what you need to do done without raising a lot of controversy. That's been pretty much the mode of operation. So I felt pretty good. I think Irv felt pretty good about the College of Engineering.
Before you move, I'd like to ask you a couple of questions about the appointment. Did he want to help the engineering college just to bring it up to the other colleges, or did he have some, was he thinking about the role of the college in the state?
I think, in all fairness, the perception of us as an economic asset was in both of our minds
uh-huh.
from the start. Irv recognized that the campus, to some degree, had an image problem of not participating in, and we were. And I'm as guilty of it as any other faculty member. I built an international reputation in my field.
Yeah.
I was known as an expert in corporate America and in Europe.
But not here.
Okay, I was invited to Japan to give keynote lectures to Japanese management. Okay. Mm. And all the same time, there were only about three companies in Wisconsin that I had close ties with. Giddings & Lewis Machine Tool Company and A.O. Smith Corporation. Now, those were it, the two. I did little things for other companies, but those two I had very close ties with.
So this was part of your program then?
Yeah. So Bob Marshall was internationally famous. He was given awards by the German Academy. He's a member of the National Academy of engineering, and hardly anybody in industry knew who Bob Marshall was mm-hmm. here in Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. It was clear to me that if we were going to get new buildings, if we were going to get more state resources, that we'd have to contribute to the state in order to convince people. It was clear that making a system out of this university, the campuses around the state, had politicized the management of the system to, you know, the phrases that the regents talk about, my campus
yes.
from Green Bay, or, you know. So there's lots of evidence that it's more politicized. Well, it was clear to me that I had to have a constituency across the state, that I had to know business people who could influence legislators effectively to make mm-hmm. To give our program state visibility.
And that was part of your presentation
yes.
to him?
Right. And that if, you know, I'm a person that I don't believe in getting more for doing the same. That doesn't work. I don't believe in getting more unless they know you'll do it well and spend it wisely, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And that means having a constituency and being visible. So we had to set the stage for that, and I think we've come a long way in doing that so far.
Did O'Neill talk to you?
I talked a lot with Bob O'Neill. I knew him very well. I live up the street from him.
Uh-huh.
You know, neighborhood social relationship. Mm. We had a casual and friendly relationship. He was not willing to take any bold moves. Bob O'Neill did not understand technology, I didn't think. Nor did he know how to cope with the Madison campus. And I felt that there were things that he could have done that he didn't do.
To help.
In terms of supporting technology.
Uh-huh.
I pointed out to him that since the Council on Higher Education there was no state coordination of technology whatsoever. In fact, there was a council on engineering education back, maybe it's in the 60s, I don't remember, I just remember it existed, that advised about the development of engineering in the state system. And when they initiated the Platteville engineering program, that was in contradiction to that report. It wasn't necessary. So it became a political thing. And I can see very well why a campus in a region like Platteville that was losing enrollments at a time when engineering was popular, engineering became a way to save a campus. And that was, in my mind, that's why they created the engineering program in Platteville. Well, here then, a relatively modest state had two private engineering programs in Milwaukee, a third engineering program in Milwaukee, state-run, one in Madison, and now one in Platteville, right in a straight line, and not in the direction of technology in the state. Geographically, it was a bad decision.
When was that? I thought Platteville was in engineering.
That might have been in late 60s, early 70s when they created Platteville. See? Mm-hmm. And if you wanted to go vertically up the state and put engineering in Green Bay, it might make some sense. Mm-hmm. But they put it over on the border to Iowa. Mm-hmm. And the only proximity to an industrial complex is in Iowa and Illinois. There's no industry in Wisconsin at all down there. Mm-hmm. So they put it out, you know, in where they needed students rather than needed a program.
Mm-hmm. I'd like you to comment on this.
You know, I'm not knowledgeable about the process. There are other people who would be much better to interview about that aspect of how engineering got started in Platteville. I was a faculty member then and didn't really worry about it.
Yeah.
But even the separating of the Milwaukee program in engineering from the Madison program, I think, was a mistake. I think in my last interview, yes, I talked about that.
Yeah.
That what we've created is a competitive system. And then they compounded that mistake recently in the integration of extension.
Yes, well, talk about that
separately
later too.
Okay. Because now they've set up two competing extension programs.
Yeah. Oh.
You see, engineering is trying to reproduce my Department of Professional Development. It's the old extension integrated into the College of Engineering. I took responsibility for 30 or 40 people, and they took the responsibility for 3. And now they want to build a competitive program with us, and they're doing it. We'll have 2 competitive programs, one in Milwaukee and one in Madison. It doesn't make any sense at all. It's a very competitive marketplace nationally that we are successful in, but we need the Milwaukee clientele to generate enough revenue, you know. And now they're competing with us for the Milwaukee clientele. But anyway, that's a whole nother topic that I'll be happy to talk about.
So you spoke to O'Neill, you made some suggestions to him,
yeah,
of things he might have done, and was his response?
He was always very friendly with me, but nothing ever got carried through from the technical point of view. And the point I was making to him was there was really no technical coordination of the technical education in Wisconsin. I mean, there still isn't. There's a little bit.
Have you talked to Shaw about that?
No, I've had long discussions with Shaw. Not this past half year, but prior to that. Last year in particular, I spent a good deal of time chatting with him. He kind of got caught in a trap, which I guess I helped set. We are desperate for space. The college just is almost a couple 100,000 square feet short of space, based on how the campus allocates space. probably the biggest space deficit of any program in the system, if you document it, you know, number-wise. Mm-hmm. We can show that need. We managed, after going through all the campus politics of campus planning, to get business and engineering at the top of the list a year ago at campus planning. Irv Shane had supported that. I originally went in three biennia ago with two buildings, two major buildings. Our space need, 200,000 square foot is too big a building for one building, because there's no place here in our real estate big enough to put one building except up, and that doesn't make sense for engineering. You need ground floor space. So we made two buildings. Well, that was probably a strategic mistake, although I had no choice, because they obviously got separated into two separate projects, three biennium ago. So I've been fighting for 6 years to get two buildings. We got one building. We kept compromising, always. Remodel this, remodel that, add onto this, add onto that. So they compromised for the electrical and computer engineering building. Irv put it out on as a campus one and two priority, engineering business. When it went to system, I had been talking a lot with Buzz about the importance of economic development, because we were riding this wave of economic development, and said, you give me that building and we'll really be in a good spot. Now, in my boldness, I said, on campus planning even, I said, I wanted an auditorium in this new building, because we don't have an auditorium. And we need a place where visitors come that's sort of an entrance. If you come into my office, you come back through the alleyway. If you come in, it's terrible. Mm-hmm. If you come in as a parent with your kids, you go sit in the office of my freshman dean in a World War II temporary building. That's not a very good image for coming to the great mm-hmm. University of Wisconsin. I need an entrance to this place that, has character and gives you an image of this is a place to do business, not an alleyway. So that building was, and that auditorium was to be the sort of the cornerstone, even though my office isn't ever going to get over there. Why, maybe I can get my freshman dean over there where parents can come into a nice atrium and, mm-hmm. and be impressed by the geography and the geometry of the place. So, at least as openers. So I needed that, and I said, I'll go raise $2 million if I get the building. Well, that seemed to work at campus planning, so the business school did the same thing. They said, I'd raise $1.5 million for the auditorium. Business said we'd raise $4 million for their building. Or they would raise $4 million. So we got on the campus list that way. Well, when we went to system, system took a look the whole state list and came out with a list of priorities that put business and engineering 17 and 18 on the list. And up ahead of us were gymnasiums and residence halls and all kinds of stuff. It was perhaps serendipity that Tommy Thompson was governor, that just became governor, and was very anxious to talk about changing the image of the state mm-hmm. in terms of its relationship, the state government, with business and industry. And so I joined forces with Jim Hickman, and we went to Tommy and said, Tommy, the university system is going to follow up. They're going to spend millions of dollars on buildings, and they've put us at the bottom of the list at the same time that they keep talking about how important it is for engineering and business to do more work with industry.
Yeah.
And he agreed that that just didn't look right. So we in an effort not to cause any embarrassment to Buzz Shaw or to the governor, we then went to Buzz Shaw, and we got some business leaders to come with us. And to make a long story short, we ultimately put together a package that Tommy Thompson could sell to the joint finance, and that Buzz Shaw could accept, although I think he feels like we pushed him into it, and we did. Anyway, we got business and engineering enumerated in the budget for the my little building and business's big building. But joint finance, this was the first time that anybody had leveraged a building into the building program for the state by leveraging the money. Yeah. It set a new precedent, which has made a lot of people very nervous, and me included, because I don't want to have to do it again. It's not easy. At any rate, we put enough political pressure on Buzz, and with the enthusiasm of Thompson, got these two buildings enumerated. But the Joint Finance Committee, which was controlled by the Democrats, felt that they were going to stick it to us for this, and they upped my $1.5 million to $2 million. They upped the business school from $4 million to $8 million that they had to raise, and they said, and you have to raise that money before you can start, before you can do your architectural and planning. Business didn't have to have all eight. They only had to have four before they could start the planning, but eight before they started construction. Well, I sweat through the fall on a campaign to find a donor for $2 million. I didn't want to blow my campaign, my capital campaign, with the foundation on raising $2 million by 1,000 from alumni, you know.
Yeah.
I wanted to find the big gift, because it's a saleable gift to recognize some donor. And all fall I struggled with that, and had just about given up on getting it done by the first of the year, when 2 days before Christmas, Santa came down the chimney and the Granger Foundation said, we'll go with it. So so I'm home free, but I know raising money for bricks and mortar in a public institution is not the way to go. My expectation of making of doing it easily is wiped out.
Can you name it for the?
Yeah, it'll be called the Granger Technology Transfer Auditorium.
Yeah.
So at least that's my plan. I haven't had it approved yet.
Did the Regents have anything? I should know this. Say on the building priorities.
Not really. See, because they. We really went right around the Regents, interestingly enough. It was enumerated on their building program. And, of course, the legislature has the authority to move it to change the priority. Mm-hmm. So the Madison Campus Library completion was number one, which we didn't want to interfere with because we wanted that to happen, obviously. It was sort of touchy. Now, Irv was already out of the picture, and it was Bernie. But nevertheless, there was no way that we, Jim Hickman and I, wanted to affect the library's position. So we were very careful about that because it was a carry-through commitment from the prior biennium. So once it left the Regents, which was Shaw's recommendation, with us 17 and 18 and all these other projects, a lot of those other projects in the middle didn't make it. And ours jumped up, okay. So it was my first real in-depth experience at state politics, and it worked. But in a meeting subsequently with Buzz Shaw, he made the very pointed comment to me, Bollinger, don't expect to get your next building in the next couple of biennium, okay. So he isn't. He wasn't happy about it, I'm convinced. But that doesn't bother me at all. We'll get it one way or another. I tried to convince him that politically it was much wiser for him to do this, to put those buildings up ahead of the others, because it was timely. You know, there's a time and the place of the time in the lives of men when the tide taken in its head leads to fame and fortune, or something like that. And I said, this is the time. The cards are all out on the table. But the political forces around the state for these other projects were fairly strong. We did create one other major controversy. You may have remembered it in the papers, that engineering wasn't so controversial as business in terms of a new building. The Milwaukee business community, I think they call it the Greater Milwaukee Committee, actually, has been very vocal and has talked about Madison probably ought to be the engineering center for education. Milwaukee should be the business center. Mm-hmm. And they talk freely about, you know, not even having engineering in Milwaukee in the university campus, but having the business school in Milwaukee. See, we have architecture in Milwaukee, not mm-hmm. Madison. So, of course, that hasn't been very popular among the Madison Business School people. Well, when we started in on this move to get these two buildings, there was a big move on the part of Milwaukee legislators to kill it and to switch it to a building in Milwaukee. Put that building in Milwaukee. And the fortunate thing was the Milwaukee campus hadn't been very well organized and hadn't put any requests in for engineering and business. They had other things on their list, too, because they hadn't focused on these topics like IRF had. And so it was a real political battle, and there was a lot of name-throwing and dagger-wheeling and things like that. But that all finally went away as it got passed through the Finance Convention. So it was a rather interesting experience. And now our building it's out for bids for the architect. And business is still trying to get finished with their $4 million. But it's going to be very, very difficult. So I went this year to the campus planning and said, I need this building, but I'm not going to raise any money.
Yeah.
So I made that story a little longer. But I don't think that, and I've talked with the governor about this, and I've talked to Bruno Maurer extensively about it. We don't have any technological focus in state government. The only engineer in state government is the Secretary for Transportation. So in terms of the only focus for business development, technical business development, is the Department of Development. And there isn't an engineer there either. So we don't have any engineering background people in the system management or on the regions. Okay, yeah. There's just no focus for the whole infrastructure for education and support of technology in the business in the state. And we end up really being about the only focus. And to what extent Marquette and the MSOE do that also in the Milwaukee community. And UW-Milwaukee has a hard time because it is a regional, local campus, and fundamentally it is. And they're in direct competition where business and industry in those communities have historically, because of their conservative politics, supported those two private institutions. And if you try to raise money in Milwaukee, it's really tough. Because Marquette, I've had a hard time even getting our co-op students into Milwaukee companies. We've broken the ice on most of them now, but 5 years ago, if we went into, say, Briggs & Stratton, say, would you like to hire Madison graduates for co-oping? They say, oh no, we do that with Marquette. It's sort of a support the institution attitude. They give a lot of money to Marquette and MSOE. We have broken the ice. We have a lot of our graduates employed there. And eventually, as they get higher and higher in the company, we get more and more influence. So we've made inroads, but I have to spend a lot of time in Milwaukee in order to do that.
Sometime, but not now. I would like you to talk about the whole process by which you tried to get to know people in Wisconsin industry and talk.
It's easy. I call them on the phone and I go see them. And then I try to do good things for them, right? Get them acquainted with faculty and get projects started, solve a technical problem that's baffling them. And you make one success and it grows.
Yeah.
You know? You have to do something. You can't just be a nice guy.
All right. But I would like to stick with Irv Shane for the moment and say, how did you feel that he looked upon the campus towards the end? You got to know him pretty well then.
Yeah.
And he supported
you. Yes, and I admired him very much. I still do. I think Irv Shane developed a very great level of frustration the last year. And it was clear, it became clear with time that we were headed for a confrontation with the system situation. There's been a growing level of bureaucracy. As system hires more and more people, they must sit around trying to figure out things to do, and they document questionnaires. There has been a persistent trend to try to get a handle on what's going on the Madison campus. And this frustrated Irv at no end, because they, between the DOA trying to get more and more of a handle on the campus and system getting, it's like a tail wagging a dog. The tail was bigger than the dog. If you look at what drives this campus, the research activity on the campus is enormous. It's, my college alone is bigger in terms of outside funding than I think all the rest of the system put together. And I'm only 12% of the campus.
Mm-hmm.
So you can kind of get the perspective that here's a massive organization here in this campus that is an economic asset to the state. If you look at the jobs that are created and the educational levels that are going on here as a national resource too, it dwarfs the rest of the system. And here it's been placed into the system as an equal. And what I think bothered Irv more than anything else, and bothers all the rest of us, and is bothering Donna Shalala right now, and will bother her more and more. I'm amazed. She's responding just like Irv Shane did. She sounds like Irv Shane already, in a different light.
Mm-hmm.
She's got something else going for her, which I get into when you get to that. But she comes back from a meeting up on at the system, and she sounds like Irv Shane. God, don't publish this. Not yet, not till the year 2000.
No.
But she sees the same thing, the leveling process, that when you try to build up all these smaller campuses to give them the same kind of vision and image that exists here, you end up only accomplishing it by tearing this down. You cannot have a leveling process and expect this place to stay intact. And I think that fear, you know, the resistance that Irv demonstrated was really because of that. Okay, that was the, in my mind, the driving force. Now, is there a way to solve the problem without becoming so totally negative? I think my sense was that Irv, well, there are two ways to solve a problem when you've got a confrontation. One is the pull yourself together and get in the shell and defend yourself with armor, right? And the other is to go out and give thine enemy a bear hug and beat them at their own game with love and tender care, right? And there's two ways of solving problems. Irv took the armor.
Yes.
Okay. I think that part of the problems that reinforced system in taking the attitude they did to the campus or had was centered in the fact that there's a lot about this university that could be improved, that we didn't try to improve fast enough. I mean, and I could give you a list. I think Donna Shalala has started to put her finger on the things. There's no excuse. We have absolutely no excuse for the registration issues. We're a great university. We're big. We're knowledgeable. We should have been among the first to implement fully automated registration, in my mind. And there's no reason why we couldn't have done it. We procrastinated. We put people off on a committee and said, figure out what we should do.
I thought it was money. I thought we couldn't afford to.
I don't think that that's the reason. We could have reallocated resources to solve that problem, in my mind. Now, I wasn't in a position to say, yeah, here's how you do it. But I think we could have done it. I don't think it's as complicated as we've made people believe it is. Or we thought it was. We put too much intellect on the problem and didn't rely on a contractor to come and do it. You know, but we haven't done a good job on this campus in running the business aspects of the campus. And I could spend 2 hours talking to you things that frustrate me the way we operate, but you can't get it changed. And Irv didn't focus on these things. Irv focused on the things he liked to do. He was not a manager of a business.
Lack of
definition of purpose, multiple parallel functions doing the same thing. And there, I think with Donna Shalala, you will see a lot of things changed because there's a lot that ought to be changed. And it mostly means cleaning up our act, getting... There's no organization chart for this campus. Never has been, to my knowledge.
Hundreds of them underneath. But
yeah, I got an organization chart for the college. And Donna came down to visit us, and I gave her my organization chart. She says, my God, this is the only one I've seen on campus. But
really?
So she's starting to see some of these things. And I think you have to move slowly, because it's a big system. The way we're organized as a state agency and the rules of personnel regulations make it difficult to move quickly. You can't fire people easily. You've got civil service. You've got academic staff rules. We have long-term rolling horizon appointments. So going in and doing what you would do if you were taking over a company to restructure it to make more money, the university has to restructure itself to make more efficiency, and in that light, saving positions and dollars and reallocating those dollars to do what has to be done. That was not a part of Irv's thinking, I don't believe. The growing effort in our research. Contracts office needs improvement. So I think a lot of things that you'll see happen will happen because someone from the outside came in who had different experiences and looks at how these things run when they face a situation. I'm sure Donna Shalala is every day facing situations, and she says, how does this possibly work, you know? Yeah. And she'll, in time, probably change those things.
Did you
we have a bad image. I mean, the legislature thinks us of as wasteful. They don't think, they haven't been well educated in terms of what is a faculty doing. So they want us to meet 16 hours a week in class. You know, all these issues come up in my mind because I believe that these are people with perceptions, and perceptions are reality. And if the perception is wrong, it's our fault for not having educated them to the way they should see us, you know. If I have any one criticism or aversion, shame, it's that he refused to take that attitude. That it's our fault, you know, if he feels that way, if another person feels that way.
Did you deans ever say to him, you ought to be doing something about this and that? You did.
Yeah, we had a long discussion back when, remember when the outside activities business came up, and we refused to open the records? There were some of us who said, Irv, that's a mistake. Open the records. Everybody, if all you have to do is talk about the hiring policies of a faculty member, nationwide, the faculty expect to have one day a week to consult. I mean, I couldn't hire anybody if I took a different attitude. Why hide it? Mm-hmm. You know? Anyway, the approach was to put it in the bag and say, put it in the file, that's a personnel file, and you can't have that. Well, that generated a lawsuit, it generated all the legislation pressure, and now the new format, which isn't bad. It's been accepted by the faculty now pretty well. But I felt we have to be totally open. We're a public institution. The taxpayers have a right to know these things, and we shouldn't do things that we don't want people to know about. If you're afraid to have somebody know about it, don't do it. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. And I certainly had a lot of concern that I would discover things that I didn't know about. We all still do. That you always wonder: is everybody honest about filling in these forms? Will they discover somebody that didn't fill them in? My position is: then we put the pressure on that person because. That's, if there's a rule and you don't follow it, then you pay the penalty for breaking the rule. And if you want to justify not following it by some argument, then we'll settle it in court, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think we should be totally open. Well, that was just one incident that I remember, that there were several deans who took the same view as I did, put it out in the let the press have. Mm-hmm. Well, they finally got it anyway. Then it wasn't so interesting. After they got it, they were disappointed. Yeah. Yeah. They thought they would discover. If there was anything disappointing, it was to learn that only a third of the engineering faculty were actually using that opportunity for consulting to the fullest. Most of the faculty are doing some consulting, but only about a third are really on a weekly basis interfacing with the outside. And I'm one of those, even yet. So I promote it in this college because I think that's one of our ways of building recognition.
Powerful statement about that in one of your press interviews.
Yeah, I'm quite upfront with it. I don't hesitate to send in my annual form and I'm glad they don't really want to know how much money I make in addition to my university salary, but it's quite significant, and I don't hedge on that bet. So I don't feel I don't think there's anybody that would say that I'm not doing my job here. I used to tell Kurt Wendt, he said, you off consulting again tomorrow? And I said, yeah. He'd say, well, okay. I said, Kurt, you just remember that if I ever don't get my job done on time and exactly what you wanted, then you tell me, but don't ask where I am. We used to have fun with that. But, you know, I put in a lot more than 40 hours a week right here. And it might be till midnight or 2 in the morning, or it might be Saturday and Sunday. In fact, that's sometimes the only way I can get caught up on all the paperwork that I get sent down here from up top, is to spend the whole Saturday here to get caught up. Mm. No, but those issues, I think, as I reflect on Irv's administration, he loved this university. You know, it was really a part of his life, and it was hard for him to accept the pressures of trying to break it down to something that was more manageable on the part of someone else. And there probably, if we had a more management-oriented leadership earlier in the game, go back before Irv, and if we had set up our data systems more effectively as technology changed, if we've set up some of our operating procedures more effectively, we might not have had the criticism that led to a lot of this. That's one of the things I was trying to say, is that there's a lot of criticism of us out there, and we probably deserve some of it. And instead of fixing that, we fought.
I've kind of gotten the impression that there wasn't any time to do anything else because there were so many reports from systems.
Well,
that's
sort of our party line, and there's truth in that. I mean, I frankly don't like the budget planning process. I think it's worse now than it ever was. It's less organized. It's more sporadic. It comes down and you want instant response. There's no strategic planning going on. If we ran a business like we run this university system, we'd be bankrupt, frankly.
Who's responsible for that?
Well, I don't know. It's just so big.
No, I mean for the change in the planning.
Oh, Shaw has implemented a lot of changes, and there's more requests coming down. It used to be that we put together a plan for the campus, and that's what went forward. It's a very distinct difference now. What's happening is the system is putting their priorities together. They're coming to the different campuses and said, give us your ideas in these priorities, and they will meld that all in. What will happen in this biennium, for the first time, you will probably lose sight of what's going on which campus.